10 topics of the Bhagavatam. Atra Saga Vishagas Cha Stanam Pushanam Uttaya Manvatara Ishanukata Nirodha Mukti Asraya. So we heard again and again and again from the first, there was the first verse and the second verse in the 10th chapter. Then after that there is an explanation of those 10 by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. We heard a very similar explanation in a verse from the 12th canto by Sutta Goswami. We heard Krishnadas Kaviraj explain those 10 topics. And then after hearing of those 10 topics and how the 9 topics, that which is created within the universe, all take shelter of the 10th, the Ashraya, who is known as the Param Brahma, the Janmadyasyataha, that one from whom everything else comes. He is the Parabrahman. He is the supreme greatest, the supreme absolute truth. Param Satyam, the supreme truth, the supreme absolute truth. And after we heard about him and how he is ultimately Sri Krishna, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the highest understanding of the Absolute Truth. Then we heard how that Absolute Truth is not the Jiva. And Sukadeva Goswami explained by explaining the Adiyatmik, Adidaivik, and Adibhautika. These persons, the person who, when we look at it, when we see that person that we see, which is basically the body of the person, who's manifest in our eye, that is the Adibhautika person. The Adiyatmika person is the jiva bound up, identifying within that body. We don't see him, but he is the person. And also there is the Adidaivaka Purush, the Adidaivaka person, who the demigods who are controlling the different elements or the different facilities within that body, the different senses within the body. So they are all interdependent. That is the proper understanding. None of those can function. The body can't function without the Adiyatmika person. The Adiyatmika person can't function without the Adidaivika person. The Adidaivika person can't function without the Adibhautika person, etc. So they are all interdependent. But the Lord, He is the creator of all those interdependent entities, and all of them individually and collectively are dependent upon Him. So again, if the jiva, who is the Adiyatmika person, is an interdependent living entity, even if he doesn't even in his pure state, we heard that verse from the 6th canto, from the Hamsakuya prayers in the 6th canto, in the 3rd chapter, how the living entity, even in his pure state, when he knows the body, when he is the Chetragya, the knower of his field, the knower of the modes of material nature, seeing himself as different from all these things, still even in the pure state he cannot know the Lord. So if he cannot know the Lord, he certainly is not the Lord. So he is always either conditioned or free. He is always a dependent living entity. And the Lord is always the ashray, the support, the shelter of all living entities. So this point that the Lord is always independent, this is one of the understandings of the Lord. This is the actual meaning of the absolute truth, that everything else is relative or dependent upon Him. And he is absolute. That means absolutely independent. The one whom everyone else is depending upon, by definition, is independent. And by definition, he is the ultimate. So the Lord is independent. And what is coming out of this is admonitions, or evoking the jiva souls who are reading this, the conditioned souls, that we should take shelter of this independent living entity, because we are very, very tiny, insignificant, dependent living entities. We should take shelter of him through the process of devotional service. The dependent living entity should serve the independent. This is very difficult for the conditioned soul to accept, but we can't avoid it. We don't like to serve, but it is the nature of the living entity. And by serving, as we all know, even though no one wants to be a servant, the more we serve, actually, the happier we become. The more satisfied we become. And the perfection of that serving mood, which is actually our sadhana, our actual nature, the perfection of that is when we are serving Krishna. That is the true self. His true service, his ultimate service, because we are dependent ultimately upon Krishna. So, to prove further this point about Krishna is independent regardless of what he is doing, because ultimately, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, we're going to see how Krishna is being fed by his mother. We're going to see how Krishna takes care of the cows with his friends. We're going to see how Krishna dances in the moonlight with the gopis. So is Krishna doing these things as we would be doing those things? When we take food from our mother, we are doing it because we need food. We are dependent on our mother for our food. But Krishna, whether he is taking food for his mother, or herding the boys, herding the cows with his friends, or dancing with the gopis, he is never dependent. He never needs anything. He never wants anything. He's not doing it for any material cause or to satisfy any need of his own. He's doing this out of spiritual reciprocation with those who have spiritual, unselfish, loving affection for him. Bhakti. So this Lord, who is fully independent, we have to learn how he is fully independent in every sphere. And how, of course, again, everything is dependent on him. So in pursuance of that, there's going to be a further explanation of the universe, showing how the Lord is independent and how everything depends on him, and showing how even this Adiatmik, Adidaivik, and Adibhautik Purushas, they all depend on him, everything depends on him, directly, indirectly. So that is what's going to be explained. So in text 10, Purushvandamini vidya yada so samanigata atmano yanam anibhichanapo vasratchik suchi suchi. After separating the different universes, so here is the Lord, the independent, all powerful Lord. He separates the different universes. The gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the places of appearance for the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separated universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, the Govardhaka. So the Lord, he separated the different universes, and this supreme Lord of the material creation, who has nothing to do with the material creation, Mahavishnu, he entered into the each universe, and he desired to lie on the created transcendental water within the universe, the Garbhadak, which he placed there. So he expanded, and that expansion is called Garbhadak Sri Vishnu. So Prabhupada explains in his purport. After analysis of the living entities and the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, the independent source of all other living beings, Sukadev Goswami is now presenting the prime necessity for devotional service to the Lord. So he has already presented that the Lord is in the Ashraya. Now Srila Sukadev Goswami is presenting the prime necessity of devotional service to the Lord, how every living entity therefore should serve him, which is the only occupational business of all living entities. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna and all of his plenary portions and extensions of plenary portions are none different from one another. And thus the supreme independence is in each and every one of them. So the Lord and all his different forms are supremely independent. Even though Krishna is the origin of them all, they are all supremely independent. In order to prove this point, how they're all independent, Sukadev Goswami, as promised to King Cricket, describes herein the independence of the Purusha avatars, the Purusha avatar personality of Godhead, even in the sphere of the material creation. Such activities of the Lord are also transcendental, and therefore they are also lila, or pastimes of the Absolute Lord. Such pastimes of the Lord are very conducive to the hearers for self-realization in the field of devotional service. So hearing about how the Lord is independent, how powerful he is in the creation of the material universe, is very important. Some may argue, why not then relish the transcendental lila of the Lord as exhibited in the land of Mathura and Vrindavan, which are sweeter than anything in the world? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur replies that the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan are meant to be relished by advanced devotees of the Lord. Neophyte devotees will misunderstand such supremely transcendental activities of the Lord, and therefore the Lord's pastimes in the material sphere related to creation, maintenance, and destruction are very relishable by the prakriti, or mundane devotees of the Lord. As the yoga system mainly based on bodily exercises is meant for the person who is too much attached to the bodily conception of existence, similarly, the Lord's pastimes related to the creation and destruction of the material world are for those who are too materially attached. For such mundane creatures, the functions of the body and the functions of the cosmic world through physical laws in relationship with the Lord are also therefore included in understanding the lawmaker, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the purpose of this, descriptions of the creation, is why? So that we understand that the entirety of this huge creation that no one can measure, that no one can understand, it is all coming from that Supreme Person, the Lord. The scientists explain the material functions by so many technological terms of material law. But such blind scientists forget the lawmaker. The Srimad Bhagavatam points out the lawmaker. So it's continuously and only pointing to the one whom everything is coming from. One should not be amazed by the mechanical arrangements of the complicated engine or dynamo, but one should praise the engineer who creates such a wonderful working machine. That is the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. Devotees are always full with praising the Lord who directs the physical laws, and the materialists are studying the wonders of the material, the laws, and the devotees have no real interest in that, but they praise the one who put together such a wonderful creation. So that Lord who has created the entirety of matter, and we are so small in comparison to this, He is fully transcendental, having nothing to do with the matter, and He is fully independent, and He is a person. Because He is independent, He can be as He wants, and He is a person. He describes this, ahamsavasya prabhavo mataksavam prabhaktite, that I am the source of everything. Krishna is saying, I. And He's a person, and He's yet the supreme truth. And yes, He's the supreme truth. Regardless of what form He takes, He is still the supreme truth. So Prabhupada continues in the purport. Despite this, foolish men will not accept Lord Krishna as the supreme Lord. Why? Generally, they consider the infinitesimal and infinite features of the Lord because they themselves are unable to become either the infinitesimal or the infinite. So they consider the great, great universe, or they take out their microscopes and their atom smashers and their particle crushers, and they try to understand the infinitesimal. But one should know that the infinite and infinitesimal sizes of the Lord are not His highest glories. So the Lord exists as everything in matter and is the smallest in matter, but that is not the most wonderful existence of the Lord. The most wonderful manifestation of the Lord's power is exhibited when the infinite Lord becomes visible to our eyes as one of us, yet His activities are different from those of the finite being. Lifting a mountain at the age of 7 years and marrying 6,000 wives in the prime of his youth are some of the examples of his infinite energy. But the mudhas, after seeing them or hearing about them, these activities, decry them, these activities, as legendary, and take the Lord as one of them. Do you want to close the window since you may expire soon if we don't close it? No, please, I am requesting this. So those mudhas, mudha means donkey, they cannot understand that Lord Sri Krishna, though in the form of a human being by His own potency, is still the Supreme Lord with full potency as the Supreme Controller. When, however, the mudhas give submissive and oral reception to the messages of the Lord, as in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the channel of the cyclic succession, such mudhas also become devotees of the Lord by the grace of His pure devotees. And for this reason only, either in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Lord in the material world are delineated for the benefit of those men with a poor fund of knowledge. So that Lord who lies down in the water, that is the Supreme Lord, Gobadakshaya Vishnu, and He is also called, as explained in verse 11 and 12, He is called Narayan. Srila Swami says in reference to text 11, this verse shows that the meaning of the name Narayan and clearly shows that He resides on the water. That Supreme Person is not impersonal and therefore is distinctively a Nara or person. Nara, Narayana. Therefore the transcendental water created from the Supreme Nara is known as Nara, and because He lies down in that water He is called Narayana. And then in text 12, Srila Swami says that this describes the glories of Narayana. One should definitely know that all material ingredients, activities, times and modes, and the living entities who are meant to enjoy them all, exist by His mercy only, Lord Narayana. And as soon as he does not care for them, the Lord doesn't care. These things exist, as long as he wants them to exist, they're existing by his shakti, by his desire. And as soon as he does not care for them, immediately everything becomes non-existent. So again, the point being that the Lord is the independent one and everything depends upon him. And he, on the other hand, is completely powerful, independent and powerful, even when dealing with the material world. So, I'd like to read a little of the purport. There's a few purports in here that really give the main essential points of this whole section. In the material world, the spirit of enjoyment of the living entities, by dint of their own actions, gradually fades by the laws of nature. That's a very interesting sentence. The spirit, even though everyone is born with such a spirit of enjoyment, you see this from the little children, and then when they get older, they're fully manifest with a spirit of enjoyment. But as one ages, that spirit gradually fades. By dint of their own actions, it fades because you get tired, because despite all your desires to enjoy, people become frustrated because it's impossible to enjoy because we are not enjoyers. So that fades by the laws of nature, and thus the illusory energy dictates in the ear of the conditioned souls that they should become one with the Lord. You should become God. You can't, don't try and enjoy. Be God. Illusory energy whispers that into the ear. So the first stage is you try to enjoy by your power, and then after that, when that fails, due to frustration, one tries to become the Lord. This is the last snare, trap of the illusory energy. When the last illusion is also cleared off by the mercy of the Lord, the living entity again becomes reinstated in his original position and thus becomes actually liberated. For this attainment of liberation from the material clutches, the Lord creates the material world. This is the purpose for liberation, so that the souls can go back to him. He creates the material world and he maintains it for some time, 1,000 years of his measurement, as stated in the previous verse, and then annihilates it by his will. The living entities are therefore completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord, and all their so-called enjoyments by scientific improvements are crushed into dust when the Lord desires. So this is the purpose, because the entirety of the material world and the material creation is going to be described. So here the purpose of the material world is described. So Lord Narayan manifests this, and if he withdrew his will, everything would be finished. He is the Anumanta. Upadrashtanam Anumanta cha bhakta bhukta maheshwara. He is the Maheshwara. Anumanta means the permitter. And the Maheshwara means the Mahaishwara, the great controller of everything. So, the Lord, we're up in describing the creation, we're up to the part where the Lord is lying within the universe. And everything is resting upon him. While lying on the bed of his mystic slumber, the Lord generated the seminal symbol, the Aranyagarbha, golden in you, through external energy, out of his desire to manifest varieties of living entities from himself alone. So the Lord desired to manifest the living entities so that they could enter the material world and become liberated. There's a nice purport later where Prabhupada will explain a little about that. So, what happens to the living entities? So, he divides those, the
that living entity, the jivas, he divides their identity into three persons, that is the adibhautik, adiatmik, and adidaivika persons, by his energies. We've heard about that already, so here it's explained a little bit further what the relationship of this is with the material world, because we've had that introduced to us already. Just hear from me, Sukadeva Goswami says, how the potency of his lordship divides one into three, the living entity, into those adibhautika, adiatmika, and adidaivika persons, called the controlling entities, the controlled entities, and the material bodies in the manner mentioned above. So how is this going to be manifest in the material world is wonderful, and it is manifest by him. And we are completely dependent upon these three. We are one of them, but we're completely interdependent upon them, and the Lord is independent. So first, we'll read just a little bit of this, and then it'll start going quickly. From the sky, situated within the transcendental body of the manifesting Mahavishnu, so of this Govardhanachari Vishnu, from within him, the sense energy, mental force, and bodily strength are all generated. So all this comes out of him, as well as the sum total of the fountainhead of the total living force. So all this comes out of him, and this is the golden you, which is going to be mentioned in the third canto. The third canto is the Hiranyagarbha, which is different meanings of it, but it is the lotus, the golden lotus that comes from the Lord's navel on which Lord Brahma is born. So all this becomes generated from Lord Govardhanachari Vishnu. As the followers of a king follow their lord, similarly, when the total energy starts in motion, when it starts moving, all other living entities move, and when the total energy stops endeavoring, all other living entities stop their sensual activity. So again, we're completely dependent on the Lord. So, from the Lord, in the universe, comes the Virata Purusha. The Virata Purusha, again, as we've heard in the earlier chapters, is the universal form. And based on the universal form, which is not the exactly the Lord's form, because the Lord has no material form, but it's like the form of the Lord within matter. But it is not exactly the Lord's form, but it is how the Lord manifests the material world. So he expresses his desire for the manifestation of the material world through this Virata Purusha. And from that Virata Purusha, the material, the Adidaivaka, Adi Atmaka, and Adi Bhautika persons come. And the purpose of this is to generate the living entities. And the purpose of the living entities being generated in their conditioned form is so we can be in the material world and have this wonderful field of activities to express our desires on. And again, we should always remember that this whole elaborate configuration of the material world is resting on the Virata Rupa, which is resting upon the Lord's desire. This is the Lord's manifestation in the material world. And in other words, everything is ultimately manifested and resting upon him. So, how does this all manifest? Now, in the text 17 through 31, first we'll just read 17. The living force, being agitated by the Virata Purusha, generated hunger and thirst. So, remember, there's the Adiatmik, Adibhautik, and Adidaivik. That means the senses, which are the bodies. It means the demigods that control this, and then it means the living entity, the jiva, conditioned living entity. So these are all manifest from the Virata Purusha. So the living force, being agitated by the Virata Purusha, generated hunger and thirst. And when he desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened of the Virata Purusha. So because Krishna's, the Varata Purusha, manifests a mouth, the demigods come, we have mouths, the body has a mouth, and the living entity uses that mouth based on the body and the demigods. But ultimately it's based on the Varata Purusha, and ultimately the Varata Purusha is based on Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who is based on Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, who is based on Shankarshan, who is based on Mahashankarshan, who is based on Balaram. So ultimately, everything is based on Krishna. So then one can say, then what is Krishna based on? But Krishna, the point being, is not based on anything. He is Swayam Prakash. He is self-manifested. He is that independent person. So in verses 17-31, we just heard one thing, how the mouth is generated, the hunger and thirst, the mouth opened of the Virata Rupa. So in text 17-31, the mouth, the tongue, the ears, the eyes, the nostrils, the legs, the hands, the skin, the genitals, the anus, the navel, the mind, the abdomen, the intestines, the life breath, the skin, blood, fat, marrow, and bones of the universal form become manifested one by one. And as Sridhar Swami explains, commenting on this, in the subsequent verses, the organs of senses and their presiding deities, so the organs, the presiding deities, and the objects of the senses should be inferred, even if not mentioned. So one by one, these things are generated, and in the verses, sometimes just the senses are mentioned, but also the sense objects will be generated from the Virata Purusha as well as the demigods. So Prabhupada explains all this clearly in this short purport, so let's just hear this. And because this is again, this is another technical chapter. The gradual process of evolution suggests the explanation of the controlling deities, Adidaivata. Because Varuna is the controlling deity for all relishable juices, therefore the mouth becomes the resting place for the tongue, which tastes all the different juices, of which the controlling deity is Varuna. This suggests, therefore, that Varuna was also generated along with the development of the tongue. The tongue and the palate, being instrumental, are adibhutam, or forms of matter. But the functioning deity, who is a living entity, is adideva, whereas the person undergoing the function is adiatma. That's the jiva. Thus, the three categories are also explained as to their birth after the opening the mouth of the Virata Purusha. The four principles mentioned in this verse serve to explain the three main principles, namely the Ariatma, Aridaiva, and the Aributam, as explained before. So this whole elaborate system, why is it being created? So we know, we've heard so many times why it's being created. Prabhupada will explain it in the next purport. But it's being created to give the living entities a chance. A chance for what? This whole elaborate system, is it meant to give us a chance just to enjoy ourselves in the material world and get a car and a horse and some land and eat and sleep and drink and have a family and sex life and rise up? All to be destroyed so quickly? Is that the purpose of the entire, this whole elaborate material creation? No. So Prabhupada explains in the next purport, in 19, when it was describing the desire to speak and again, the demigod controlling speech is developed, and the tongue is developed, and the sense object of speech is developed, all coming from the Lord's Virata Rupa, all coming from Lord Narayan, all coming from ultimately Krishna. So Prabhupada explains in the purport the reason why all this is being done. The peculiarity of the gradual development of the different senses is simultaneously supported by their controlling deities. It is to be understood, therefore, that the activities of the sense organs are controlled by the will of the Supreme. Nothing is independent in this world. We are all completely dependent. The senses are, so to speak, offering a license. So what is the purpose of the senses? They are offering a license for the conditioned soul who are to use them properly under the control of the controlling deity deputed by the Supreme Lord. One who violates such controlling regulations has to be punished by degradation to a lower status of life. Consider, for example, the tongue and its controlling deity, Varuna. The tongue is meant for eating, and men, animals, and birds each have their different tastes because of a different license. So a bird eats worms, men generally don't eat worms. They like a different kind of food, and a dog likes it. Everyone, according to the body they have a different license by the demigods to enjoy in a particular way. The taste of human beings and that of the pig, the swine, are not on the same level. The controlling deity, however, awards or certifies a particular type of body when the particular living entity develops a taste in terms of different modes of nature. If the human being develops taste without discrimination, as does the swine, then the controlling deity is certainly certified for the next term to award the body of a swine, a pig. The swine accepts any kind of foodstuff, including stool, and a human being who has developed such indiscriminate taste must be prepared for a degraded life in the next life. So this information is not what you read in the newspapers. The newspaper is not full of knowledge, it is full of ignorance. The school textbooks are not full of knowledge, they are full of ignorance. The novels in the bookshops and the non-fiction books and technological manuals, they are full of ignorance. They don't teach this. They don't teach us how to use our lives properly. And Prabhupada and the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of great compassion, go to great length to spread this knowledge throughout the world. That yet you don't know this. They loudly tell everyone. But if you don't use your tongue properly, you might become a pig in your next life. You don't use your legs properly, you might become a centipede in your next life, or a bird, or this or that. So, what compassion. And they suffer so much because of their compassion too. They suffer so much criticism, even up to death, being killed, because they're going against the material tide. So such a life, meaning if one gets the body of a pig, a swine, is also God's grace, because the conditioned soul desired a body like that for perfectly tasting a particular type of foodstuff. If a man gets the body of a swine, it must be considered the grace of the Lord, because the Lord awards the facility. After death, the next body is offered by superior control, not blindly. A human being, therefore, must be on his guard as to what sort of body he's going to have in his next life. An irresponsible life of indiscrimination is risky, and that is the declaration of all scriptures. So next, the nose is explained. And again, in this purport, Prabhupada explains that again, the living entity can only see all these senses are not independent. We are proud of our eyes, but they are not independent. We are proud of our nose and our ears and our hair and our this and our that, but they are not independent. We are completely dependent. So the living entity can see only when the Lord sees. So when the universal form sees, then we see. The living entity can smell when the Lord smells, and so on. The idea is that the living entity cannot do anything independently. So all this philosophy, these examples, is moving us to understand again that we are dependent and the Lord is independent, and therefore we should worship Him. We are so proud of our independence, but actually we are completely dependent. So therefore, we are proud of illusion only. It is only dreaming that we're independent. We're so proud and we don't want to surrender. So he can simply think of doing something independently, but he cannot act independently. This independence in thinking is there. Thinking that we are independent is also there by the grace of the Lord. But the thinking can be given shape by the grace of the Lord. And therefore the common saying is that man proposes and God disposes. The whole explanation is on the subject of the absolute dependence of the living entities and absolute independence of the Supreme Lord. Less intelligent persons claiming to be on an equal level with God. So, less intelligent persons. Why is someone who claims to be on an equal level with God less intelligent? Because obviously we're not independent. And nothing is depending on us, ultimately. So we're not making the moon rise, the sun rise, the rains come, the rains stop. The plants grow, and yet people claim that they can become God. So that's less intelligent to the highest degree. So people who claim to be on an equal level with God must first prove themselves to be absolute and independent. Stop growing old, stop your hair from growing. Move the sun. Make it go in the opposite direction a few times. Make the trees, instead of going towards the sun, go in the opposite direction. Prove yourself independent. And then they must substantiate their claim to being one with God. The purpose is so powerful, making the points very strongly. So one by one, the different senses become generated with the demigods and the sense objects. Sight, hearing, sense of touch with all the feelings, sensations that come from the skin pores and the skin, that's all generated. And the hands are generated with their strength from the legs because the Lord desired to control, for movement, to control movement. The legs are generated, and the predominating deity of the legs, amazingly enough, is Lord Vishnu. And it explains why, Prabhupada explains why in the purport, because it is Jagya, and that is Lord Vishnu. Because the legs are meant to propel us from one place to another so we can do work, and work is meant for a sacrifice for Vishnu. Sacrifice means doing on behalf of another. Being selfish is not satisfying, actually. But working on behalf of another is satisfying. The people will work and work and work. But they will spend all their hard-earned money on their family. So to work for another is what is satisfying. But give by Vishnu a work. And the legs that are propelling us, allowing us to be here and there and work and do this and do that, they are meant to satisfy the Lord of sacrifice, the Lord in charge of sacrifice, Lord Vishnu. Yatta pravitabhutanam yena savaminam tatam. So work as a sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed for our own benefit. The desire to beget children with the appropriate organs, etc., and objects. Evacuation, everything coming. Food and drink, intestines, the arteries. The mind becomes manifested. And the seven elements of the body, these are mentioned in the Ayurveda, the flesh, blood, marrow, bones, fat, skin, layer on the skin, and the air circulating through these are all manifest on the universal form. Then in text 32, it starts moving and changing the topic. So after all this has been described, and of course there have been many hints and direct and indirect as what the purpose of it is, but what is the purpose of all this? This knowledge. We've heard something about the purpose of the creation. What is the purpose of all this knowledge? So text 32 explains the interrelation between all these things. The sense organs, we've heard so much about the sense organs and how they're created. They're attached to the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature are products of the false ego. The mind is subjected to all kinds of material experiences. So there's the false ego, the mind, the modes of material nature, and the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. And Prabhupada describes these one by one, and then it starts moving still further. So we're trying to understand the basic categories of these things and how they work. Illusion, purport, Prabhupada's purport. Illusion by the material nature, the living entity identifies with false ego. More clearly, when the living entity is entrapped by the material body, he at once identifies with the body relationships, forgetting his own identity as a spirit soul. This false ego associates with different modes of material nature, and thus the senses become attached to the modes of material nature. Mind is the instrument for feeling different material experiences, but intelligence is deliberative and can change everything from the better. So there's going for the better. So there's instructions in this for the intelligence. So that the intelligence learns this because some action is going to be demanded. The intelligent person, therefore, can attain salvation from the illusion of material existence by proper use of intelligence. An intelligent person can detect the awkward position of material existence, how we are covered and everything in material existence is intricate, and how we are completely dependent upon Krishna. Intelligent person, especially after study of Shastra, especially after reading Bhagavatam, he can understand all this. And then, an intelligent person can detect the awkward position of material existence and thus begin to inquire as to what he is, why he is subject to different kinds of misery, and how to get rid of all miseries. And thus, by good association, this is the process that the intelligent person does. He inquires, then gets involved with good association. An advanced intelligent person, due to that good association, can turn towards the better life of self-realization. It is advised, therefore, that an intelligent person associate with the great sages and saints who are on the path of salvation. By such association, one can receive instructions which are able to slacken the conditioned soul's attachment for matter. And thus, the intelligent man gradually gets rid of the illusion of matter and false ego and is promoted to the real life of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So now, all this covering that we've been describing and all this knowledge, we're expected to understand how we are trapped in this. Now, what else are we expected to understand? Thus, by all this, the external features of the personality of Godhead is covered by gross forms, such as those of the planets, which were explained to you by me. So, all this matter becomes the senses that are described in the universal form, the senses, the blood, the skin, etc., there it is all covering over the living entity who is a soul, who is eternal. And because he is covered by this matter, and because he is covered by false ego, he identifies with the body, and it literally kills him, forces him to experience the pain of death. So understanding the vastness of this covering, and that this covering is the Virata Rupa, a materialistic person can understand God in that. But this covering is the supreme. This is for materialistic people. Understand there is something higher than me, something that is controlling me. The grossest of people in the mode of ignorance can't even understand that. And basically this is how the second canto of the Bhagavatam began, explaining the first step in self-realization, understanding this Virata Rupa, and it's ending in the same way. Understanding the coverings over the living entity, that we are completely dependent, and there's something so much more powerful than us. So beyond that, so that's basically a pantheistical understanding, seeing how the supreme is in everything that's in existence, which actually these things are coverings of us. But this is a step in self-realization. And then in text 34, therefore, and this is an interesting verse, it's the next stage above the pantheistical understanding, the pantheistical material phase. Ata param sukshmatarmam avyaktam niveseshanam anadhimadhyanidharam nityam van manasaparam. Now this is describing a higher stage. Listen to these words. Therefore, beyond this gross manifestation, therefore, ta, beyond this, is param. There is something transcendental. Sukshmamatam, finer than the finest, so subtle. Avyaktam, unmanifested. Nirvisheshanam, without qualities, without material features. Anadi, without beginning. Madhya, without an intermediate stage. Nidhanam, without end. It has no beginning, no end, no middle, no qualities. Nityam is eternal. Vak manasa param, it is beyond the words and one's mind. So when one hears this, one can understand, one will understand that there is the gross matter that is the supreme, and beyond that, there is this qualityless, impersonal feature that is supreme. But then, text 35, which is the next to last verse, describes something very wonderful. Amuni Bhagavad Rupe Mayate Yanuvarnite Ube Api Nagananti Maya Shriste Vipassita. Neither of the above forms of the Lord, as just described unto you from the material angle of vision, is accepted by the pure devotees of the Lord who know him well. So those two, the pantheistical, everything is the Lord, and understanding that basically nothing is the Lord, the Lord is beyond everything, the negative of the matter, these are not accepted by the Lord. And Srila Swami comments in this that these two forms are forbidden by this verse. The form of matter as the Supreme and the form of the impersonal, the aspect of the impersonal as the Supreme. They are forbidden in this verse. And then in 36, He, the Personality of Godhead, manifests Himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of His transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness. Although He is unaffected by all such activities, He appears to be so engaged. So this is what the actual transcendentalists do accept. They accept the transcendental form of the Lord, which actually fulfills all the characteristics of that are mentioned in text 34, because He is param, transcendental, shukshmatamam, finer than the finest, avyaktam, materially unmanifested, nivisheshanam, without material features. This is Krishna. His body, His transcendental body, is Satchidananda, Vigraha, Nadiradi Govindam. He's without, it has no beginning, no middle, and without end. He's eternal, and it is limitless, although with a form. This is inconceivable. And the words, the mind, He's eternal, and His word, one's words and mind, one's own powers, cannot neither describe Him nor understand Him, because who can understand that the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a cowherd boy walking around in Vrindavan without shoes on, holding some food in his left hand with a peacock feather upon his head? Who, by their own power, could ever speculate and understand this? So He fulfills all the characteristics of the transcendental, beyond nivishesha aspect. So Prabhupada explains in the Purport of 34, He is certainly transcendental to all material conceptions. This is called nivisheshanam. One should not, however, misunderstand nivisheshanam as being without any transcendental qualifications. Visheshanam means qualities, therefore near, added to it means that He has no material qualities or no material variegatedness. This nullifying expression is described in four transcendental qualifications, namely unmanifested, transcendental, eternal, and beyond the conception of mind or words. Beyond the limit of words means negation of the material conception. Unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to know the transcendental form of the Lord. When one is in the realm of matter, one cannot understand. But that doesn't mean that there is nothing to be understood. But we have to break free. To understand the Ashraya, one has to be free from the bondage of the ropes of matter. Prabhupada explains all these points in detail in his Bhaktivedanta purports. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya, Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.